Let's talk a little bit about that and your time there. Would you come back and forth to the United States, say in a year's time?
Maybe twice.
Oh, really? In that time. So from 61 to 69, you lived in Iran.
Totally.
And took on that culture.
Yeah.
Was that tough for you to do?
No. No. You know, that's young in our married lives, and it was fascinating. It was really interesting, and it was very easy. There were people who helped you for nothing, practically. I mean, just pathetic when you think about the wages in those days. And you couldn't buy things. Books were the only things you could buy without horrific duty. You paid so many import taxes on toys. We just didn't buy toys. But the labor was just incredible. The help that we got at the house we rented, we had people who lived on the property, and they helped us with the children. They helped us with the cooking. They helped us with everything. So it was a very easy life. I learned to speak Persian and went to school on the side there because I had the help to be able to leave my children and go to school for a few hours a week.
Learning Persian?
Mm-hmm. Learning Persian and learning a little bit about Islam.
I'm not keeping track of the children, but they would begin their education.
That's right. They started at Persian kindergarten. Then the oldest two sons actually eventually went to British school. Then the youngest one was in Persian kindergarten. And I also got to teach a little bit in a girls' school.
And what did you teach?
English.
And you said you lived in Tehran for that summer. Did you settle down in another town?
No, but we settled down further up in the mountains, up in the hills. We lived above Tajrish, which is a square that left an indelible memory with me because you would see military generals walking around the square buying bread and fresh green walnuts and incredible wares and food. It was like an open-air bazaar every Saturday. It would be something like our fresh market here on Saturday. But the whole square was this way. There would be young people sitting around on the hoods of cars, ogling the girls. It was just a real scene, and the smells were incredible. They had these ovens that were right there off the square where you could smell this great bread baking and dried fruit skins in the sun. They also had a smell of their own, especially the apricot. I remember that. Lavashak, I think it was called. And then this different kinds of Persian bread, but all baked on stones and on bricks. Just wonderful smells.
Did you ever get homesick for the United States?
No. No, I really didn't. The last time I got homesick, I think, was when I was at St. Catharines, and I got homesick for home. But I was so interested in where we were.
The boys were learning Persian too then?
Oh, yeah, they couldn't help it. They had to, of necessity. Easier for them.
Is that a difficult language to learn?
Not that hard. There's one operative verb, and you can put almost anything with it and make it happen. Konam, kardam, and you just say, no, I want to go to the drugstore. Drugstore, mikonam, going to the drugstore. You put anything with that verb and it works. It's a beautiful sounding language. It's, to my ear, much more beautiful than Arabic, which is so full of these short guttural sounds. And Persian is a more flowing language. And it's got some of that softness of the Russian language, you know, zhenya. Some names that are Russian. And some of the words, like the word for drinking glass, is the same as it is in Russian. The estakan. There are just a lot of lovely words, and I haven't spoken it since. So, you know, it's a
time you left Iran, that was it. Well, there aren't too many people around here who...
No, not a lot of Persian speakers. Every now and then I'll get a cab driver or someone.
Oh, really?
But the only thing I can remember to say is everything I ever knew in Persian I've forgotten.
Politically, in Iran in the 60s, the Shah of Iran, you probably did follow all of that because we come to a name here that we're all now very well known with, but with American support, the Shah was modernizing the infrastructure. but he also crushed all forms of any political opposition with his agency.
Yeah.
And you sensed that? Did you feel that there?
Oh, yeah.
You knew that was going on?
Mm-hmm. Those were the days when the Shah was the Shah. It was definitely one-man rule. But he did stage what he called the White Revolution. This mainly involved land reform, which the mullahs hated, taking land away from the church. It was a very tricky thing to do, and giving it to people in the hinterlands. It brought radios to the far reaches of the villages in the country and brought rights for women, accentuated the arts. That was really a time of the arts flourishing. Faradiba, who was the queen when we were there in the 60s, she was a great patron of the arts, and she made a lot of things come alive for contemporary people, movie makers and photographers, not just painting, drama, dancing, I mean, all of these things. And she had a committee to advise on women, advisory committee. It seems to me that he listened less and less to us, the Americans, as time went on. He had no power of succession ready. There was no power of succession in place. And there were assassination attempts on his life in the 60s, but that wasn't enough. He didn't trust people. He was quite paranoid by the end of the 60s when we left. Of course, he wasn't overthrown for another 10 years in 79. But you could feel the signs of a building resentment because he was getting ready for the coronation to crown himself Shah Shah. There was a very expensive triumphal arch that was going to be constructed, and everyone was taxed for the construction, paying for the arch. Even the people who sold pencils and oranges out in the street, everyone was taxed. And they resented it. The people who worked with us, they talked to us about how much resentment there was.
Then a name that became world-renowned was Ayatollah Khomeini later on.
Yeah.
The whole world became acquainted with. He became a critic of that white revolution that you talked about.
Absolutely.
And he was very publicly denouncing the government of the Shah.
Yeah.
You remember all that tension that went
on
there?
Yeah, I remember. And he was exiled, living in Paris. He even lived in Iraq at one time.
And he was also sent to Turkey. He was first sent to Turkey.
Yeah. He sounded like a very pro-democracy mullah. If people had read what he had written, they would have known he had designs on turning the government into a fundamentalist Islamic government.
Okay.
But people didn't read. We didn't read. I even questioned how well the CIA even listened, because the two people I knew who were said to be CIA couldn't even speak Persian as well as I could. I think that's why some people thought I might be CIA, because I did learn to speak the language at the time. I don't know how you eavesdrop if you don't fluently speak the language.
So was there that question about neighbors or whatever? You didn't know for sure what their lot in life was and why they were there?
Yeah, they would get reported to Sabak, even the girls in the school. Sabak was the secret police. That was the Shah's right arm. I will say that he was very tolerant of Israel, very tolerant of the Jewish community living in Iran, tolerant of Baha'is and other people who were not always tolerated in other countries. Armenians, you know, various people who were totally respected in Iran. And that wasn't part of the White Revolution necessarily. I think that was just part of their psyche. They've always been, as far as I know, tolerant people.
With the Williams companies there, they built the first pipeline from the Gulf to Russia with other countries helping. The Shah or the government, did they ever interfere with the Williams companies and what their work was, or did they have problems there?
No, I think they were fairly praising. I think they saw them not as NIOC, which seemed to be more British, because the British controlled oil in the Middle East until Mossadegh took over. He was the prime minister in the 50s. He took over and actually nationalized the oil industry. And then the British got it back largely. but it nonetheless was a national Iranian oil company, an IOC. The British were always resented more than we were. Because they had a past, we really didn't have a past.
Yeah.
Now, we brought the Shah back from Switzerland, and he was kind of reluctant about that, but we brought him back when they claimed order was needed and they couldn't deal with Mossadegh. But the British were really behind that. We were the front people on that. But the history of resentment with England went back hundreds of years.
Then
not hundreds, but maybe 100.